Support for Here and Now comes from BetterHelp, committed to supporting mental health through therapy. Clients are matched with one of 25,000 therapists and can communicate via video, chat, or phone at betterhelp.com/public.
A great public servant, widely respected at home and abroad. That's how former President George W. Bush is remembering Colin Powell, his first Secretary of State. Powell died today of complications from COVID-19. He was 84. He was fully vaccinated, but reportedly had lower immunity due to blood cancer. Defense Secretary Lloyd Austin praised Powell as one of the greatest leaders we have ever witnessed. He was also his mentor.
First African-American chairman of the Joint Chiefs. First African-American Secretary of State. A man who was respected around the globe. And who will be, quite frankly, it is not possible to replace a Colin Powell.
Powell's legacy was also complicated. His reputation suffered a blow after a speech he made in 2003 to the United Nations, where he gave faulty claims about weapons of mass destruction, which led to the U.S. going to war with Iraq. Let's bring in NPR national security correspondent Greg Myrie, who joins us now. Welcome.
Hi, Tanya.
Greg, the tributes and feelings expressed show the complicated legacy that Powell leaves. We've been hearing them all morning today. He's the first in so many ways, but also a lot are talking about his approach and views on war. He could never live down that infamous speech to the UN about the alleged existence of weapons of mass destruction in Iraq. Briefly remind us.
Right. Well, he had such a powerful reputation based on his earlier work in the first Gulf War when he was chairman of the Joint Chiefs. But in the second Gulf War, as the Bush administration was making its case, Colin Powell went to the United Nations, spoke for more than an hour, delivering what he said was the best American intelligence, that Saddam Hussein had chemical and biological weapons and was possibly working on nuclear weapons as well. And that was what many remember as the strongest case that the administration made for going to war. As we all know, those weapons were not found. The war has dragged on and been terribly messy. The U.S. still has 2,500 troops there to this day. And that is how many people remember Colin Powell, though it was very much at odds with much of what came before that.
Powell had misgivings, though, about the war in Iraq, and later said he regretted the United Nations speech that he made. In 2011, he interviewed with NPR, and he explained his statements about Iraqi weapons of mass destruction. Let's listen.
It wasn't just me making the case. Everybody was making the case. The president was making the case. Many members of Congress were making the case. And I was as disappointed as anyone, since I was the principal presenter of the case, when it turned out that so much of it was flawed and it was single-sourced on a very unreliable source that we should have been aware of was unreliable.
Greg, how does that resonate today? Because I'm thinking about that legacy. I mean, he is considered a great leader and someone who was trusted both with Democrats and Republicans for many years.
Yeah, one thing I'm seeing, Tanya, is almost this generational split. Those who are older and remember Colin Powell from the early 1990s and his role in the first Gulf War and his prominence as the first African-American to hold a number of top posts, see him in that light and see this second Iraq War episode is a bit of an outlier that shouldn't really define his whole career. I think younger people, a younger generation, that's their dominant memory of Colin Powell, and they're much more critical and see that as something you can't separate from what he might have done before. So I do sense that there's a bit of a generational split on how he's viewed to this day.
Powell's trajectory is often referred to also as the American success story, a classic one. He was the son of Jamaican immigrants, raised in New York City, and he was able to use the military kind of as a ladder of opportunity. Briefly tell us more about his trajectory that led him to be the first Black Secretary of State under George W. Bush.
Right. He wasn't a great student, and he went to the City College of New York. And years later, people would ask him, tell us about your time at West Point. And he said, well, I couldn't get into West Point. I didn't have the grades for that. But he was clearly a natural leader. He was in ROTC in college. He rose through the military ranks quite quickly. He pointed out how much the military did provide opportunity. He noted that when he just got out of the military, he was, as a black man, was not allowed to live on base in Fort Benning, Georgia. And by the end of his career, he was the top American soldier as the head of the Joint Chiefs. So this really allowed him to advance in his mind, and he was always very proud of what the Army had done. He became National Security Advisor to President Reagan, and then Joint Chairman of the Joint Chiefs under the first President Bush, and sort of stepped aside from public life in the late 90s, but then came back as the first black Secretary of State under George W. Bush.
I have about 30 seconds with you. You talk about that generational split and viewing his legacy, but what do you think he will be most remembered for?
Oh, I think he'll certainly be remembered as someone who helped establish U.S. military and foreign policy at the end of the Gulf War. That will certainly be very prominent in any reckoning of Colin Powell. But also, again, he can't completely divorce himself from the second Iraq War. So those two Iraq wars defined him in very different ways.
Greg Myrie is NPR's national security correspondent, talking with us about the death of Colin Powell, the nation's first black Secretary of State during the George W. Bush administration. Thank you so much.
My pleasure.